jy luister na 105.
And then that is when the kid will open up and tell you that 3 years ago or 5 years ago, you know, I went to an awareness campaign last week, Friday. And yesterday I gave out my numbers. So yesterday when I get home, round about 6, I receive a text saying that you spoke about rape. And it once happened to me 27 years ago. And you know what? I cannot sleep. You know, this is what is happening. I feel like crying. And, you know, I'm staying with the person. I'm seeing the person each and every day. And I didn't know what to do. Only until last week, Friday, when you spoke about it.
Survival Mode 101 is in samenwerking met GRIP, die Greater Rape Intervention Program in die Laagveld. Die gesprek is met Johan Strydom en Terren Lokotsch, die hoofuitvoerende bestuurder van GRIP.
Welkom by Survival Mode 101. Op hierdie program fokus ek, Johan Strydom, en soos ek al nou gedoop het, my soutie vriendin Terren Lokotsch, op GRIP.
Hi everyone.
So ver weet jy wat GRIP is. Jy het al saam met ons van GRIP se spanlede ontmoet en gesels oor die mediese aspekte van verkrachting. Simbongile was laas week hierso en ons het gesels oor die Hearts Not Heads program wat GRIP reël. Dit was nou 'n mond vol. So kom ons sê net eers welcome to our guest Farida Mashaba.
Thank you very much for having me.
Farida, let's start with you. Who are you? How long have you been at GRIP? Why did you start at GRIP? Take it away.
Ooh. thank you once more. My name is Farida, as she said. Born and bred in Nelspruit. Mother of two, second mother of two. Started working for GRIP in 2016. Getting a job at GRIP was one of, I could say, the lucky moments, because I went there to ask for voluntary work. And then the previous CEO there then suggested that, no, you can't be a volunteer after the interview. She said that, no, you can't be a volunteer. No, we're going to find something for you to do around GRIP. So that is how I got to GRIP. And yeah, here I am today.
And what do you do at GRIP?
Okay, I am an awareness and linkage officer.
And that is?
awareness and linkage officer is basically whereby if a survivor comes in and they need to be linked to other services, that's my duty to link them. They test HIV positive. It's my duty for me to see that they get their ARVs. You know, and to also other services. Maybe let's say they want to see the social worker. I need to make sure that they get those services. So yeah, I actually link to care. And on the other awareness side, I do awarenesses in and around Nelspruit and the outskirts. Awareness raisings I do at schools. I also do at communities. I do in churches. You name it, and I'm there.
And I'm creating awareness there.
Yes.
So you started at GRIP in 2016.
Yes.
And you are an awareness and linkage officer. And basically, just to summarize, you supervise over awareness campaigns and you also hold them. You're also very actively involved in them. And you review survivor files.
Yes, I review survivor files on a daily basis. That's my duty on a daily basis. If I'm not on the ground, if I'm not on the field, the case files that are documented, I get to review them to see that everything is documented correctly. Did you receive the services that you require? And do I have to refer you to other stakeholders? Yeah, basically that.
And you mainly deal with gender-based violence victims.
Yes, I do. I do deal with gender-based violence victims. And, you know, sometimes it's not only gender-based violence, even child neglect. And we've been seeing a lot of number of cases whereby kids are being abandoned. So, yeah, I'm the first person to be called.
So also social, sort of in a social service direction as well.
Kind of, yeah.
Maybe of many talents.
You can say that, yeah.
So let's look more to the gender-based violence topic.
Okay.
What is gender-based violence? Has it gone up recently? Has it gone down? Is it more in families? Is it more random? How are things looking?
So at the moment with gender-based violence, the reason why I know that it's gone up recently and that we're seeing quite a few more cases in our hospitals is because we chatted when we were preparing for this, we've run out of care packs. We have a few left, but we're running low. And it's always when we run low on care packs that I know, oh my goodness, you must have had a lot of cases, because a week or two ago I saw that our whole room was full of care packs, and then suddenly we really have none left. So reviewing the stats, I must say that definitely the number of GBV cases lately is on the rise. And the concern with the GBV cases that we're seeing is that a lot of them is really young kids. It's young children that are being abused, violated, raped. And I think also because we've recently opened our police station care rooms to be 24-hour care rooms, we generally are seeing more cases. A lot of cases are being reported hours during the night where we didn't see those cases before. We would try and get them to come back to the police station in the morning, but it wasn't, frequent that they would return to see our social workers and to get the GRIP services. So now that we're 24 hours, yes, definitely we are seeing more cases. And GBV is certainly on the rise. Hey, Farida?
Yes, it is. To add to that, the funny part is that most of these cases that we see, they are incest cases. You know, it's family members, your uncle, your grandpas. So it's on the rise. And it's not like we're not doing awareness, but we are doing the awareness raisings. One could say it's demonic. I don't know. It's actually a pandemic, so that we are facing, and we don't know when and how it's going to end and how. But definitely, we'll keep on raising the awareness to the communities and saying that it is wrong. And
but I think we can look at it from two ways. I think we can also look at it the fact that we're seeing an increase in the number of cases being reported is perhaps just the results of your awareness is being effective. You know, the whole point that we go into the community to do awareness is not necessarily to stop GBV, because we know that we're not ever going to be able to stop it completely, but it is to make people aware of our services and how to access our services. So I think the fact that we're seeing an increase in cases and we are helping more and more people is perhaps just, a well done to you guys and your team for doing such good awareness in the community.
Thank you. And basically, when you're doing an awareness at the school, let's say it's a primary school, immediately when you speak of rape and you go into the interims of rape and stuff like that, you will see from the audience that there's some fidgeting, and some looking away, and you'll see that there's a problem there. And after the awareness session, they will come up to you and say that, what you just spoke about now has once happened to me. And then that is when the kid will open up and tell you that 3 years ago or 5 years ago, I went to an awareness campaign last week Friday, and yesterday I gave out my numbers. So yesterday when I get home around about 6, I receive a text saying that you spoke about rape, and it once happened to me 27 years ago, and I cannot sleep, this is what is happening, I feel like crying, and I'm staying with the person, I'm seeing the person each and every day, and I didn't know what to do, only until last week Friday when you spoke about it. So I feel that, the more awareness raisings that we are doing, it's the more that the cases get reported, 27 years ago. Can you believe that? Living with...
It's really sad.
Yeah.
And it's the gender-based violence, mainly which groups being targeted? Children, women, or LGBTQ people, gay people?
It's actually everyone. It doesn't have age, it doesn't have color, it doesn't no race, nothing. It's actually everyone. You get a person, a granny, 93-year-old granny that has been sexually violated. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, as you said before, rape doesn't discriminate. Our youngest survivor has been 6 months old, and our oldest survivor has literally been 100 years old, that we saw in Tinswalo Hospital, which is one of the hospitals that we're at in Bushbuckridge. And you know what? We've actually got a monitoring and evaluation team on board, and we'll definitely have a podcast with someone from that team because it's very interesting. But they kind of try and track the trends with regards to rape cases. You know, what are the busy months? What are the months that are not so busy? You know, what ages are we seeing? Is there more boys? Is there more girls? That kind of thing. And it's crazy, but you actually can't really pick up a set pattern.
Mm-hmm.
From month to month, it just differs so much.
Mm-hmm.
Some months, it's all really young people and you start to get concerned. And the next month, you are doing awareness raising in like old age homes because there's being an incident between two really old people. So from day to day, we never really know what to expect, and we can't actually say who exactly is the most vulnerable. What we can say is that the age group that we're kind of focusing our efforts on is kind of 10 to 24,
mm-hmm.
and that being because sort of from 10, sort of in swell you in school and whatever, and you're growing and you're learning, we can then teach you about gender-based violence mm-hmm. so that you know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then our funders and research has indicated that the most vulnerable age group is 20 to 24. So based on that research, that's what we, you know, those are the sort of age groups we are trying to target. But certainly I feel rape doesn't discriminate, and we would certainly never turn anyone away.
But is there a reason for 20 to 24, that age group?
I'm not really sure. I think I suppose you're young and you're vulnerable and you've finished school. I mean, a lot of people aren't able to get into TVET colleges or sort of get the education that they need. And a lot of the 20 to 24 we see, obviously there can be drugs involved. Yeah. There can be alcohol involved. A lot of these things happen at taverns or at parties.
And in most cases, the 20 to 24 years, remember, they're still fresh from out of school and they want to explore the world and stuff like that. They go into different, they leave home, actually.
Yeah.
They go to universities out of their homeland to other provinces. And we know when they get to other provinces, they want to fit in and stuff like that. So they get to be exposed in many things,
yeah.
you know, and clubbing, and that's where most of these rape cases happens. You know, sometimes when you go to the universities over the weekend on Monday, that is when you'll hear most cases have happened, you know. They were in the club, their drinks got spiked and stuff like that, you know. Some of them, they're looking for father figures in the wrong people.
That's exactly it, yeah.
And those older people will be now forcing them to do stuff. So that's how it happens. And, you know, if there's no agreement, consensual agreement between the two people, it's rape.
Nope.
So where should gender-based violence victims go? If I was a victim now of gender-based violence, where should I go?
Oh, okay. Let's say I'm going to speak of domestic violence.
Let's focus on domestic violence.
Yes, I'm going to speak of domestic violence. If you happen to, if you're in and around now, spread it happens to you that you were violated like that, the next point of entry is Nelspruit Police Station. Very, very in the open. As you walk into the CSC charge office, the door that you are facing is the GRIP care room. You go in there. You will meet our first responder there. They will welcome you. Make sure that you are comfortable. Remember, you know, we handle pain in different ways. Might be crying, might be shocking. You know, sometimes you don't believe that the person you've stayed with for years and years could assault you, you know. So it's very, very shocking. So you need to first calm down. We don't pressurize you to, like, now start talking, our time is going. No, we make sure that you are comfortable. And after that, when you are ready to talk, then we start talking. And then you narrate your story and how it happened and stuff like that. And then afterwards, that is when we get to call a police officer to come and take down your statement. That's if you want to open a case against the person. You have options. You know, we narrate the options to you. We don't tell you what to do. We actually say, these are your options. You can either get a protection order or you can open a case. That is what we do.
What is a protection order?
Okay, a protection order is a legal and binding document that is used that is obtained at the court. First of all, you do not need to open up a case to obtain a protection order. any person, as long as you're above 18, you can obtain a protection order. And funny enough, you don't even have to be a South African to obtain a protection order. You know, protection order, we guide you to say that if you want to open a protection order, these are the steps to follow. And we go with you to the court in order to obtain the protection order. A protection order is where you stipulate what you don't want the perpetrator to do to you. It's either you don't want them to call you, you don't want them to come to your house, you don't want him to come to your workplace. You know, whatever that you feel that you don't want is what is included in the protection order. But there is a twist in that protection order, because if you now say you stipulated that you don't want to be called, and then now he calls and you answer, and then you get into a conversation and stuff like that, now you have now violated that protection order. And if you go and call them back and stuff like that to say that you received a missed call from them, you are violating that protection order. So we need to be very careful and not make hasty decisions, because at times, you know, it goes and backfires on us. Because now when the person comes to your place, they have violated the protection order, you allow them in, they beat you up, you go back to the police and say that he came to my place and he has beaten me up. He has the right to say that you were the one who invited me over. So they cannot arrest. They cannot. Yes, they cannot arrest now the person to say that they violated it. You're the one who has violated it.
And in order, I just wanted to emphasize, you don't have to open a case in order to get a protection order.
No, that's you don't have to open a case. You know, obtaining it is it's part of your right. Yeah, I can put it that way. It's part of your right that you can open it without, you know, and even when the police may be saying that, let us have an intermediary session, let us bring the person in so that you guys can talk. No, you don't want to talk. No. Do that. You will do that when the protection order. Remember, when the protection order is issued, there's a date that is going to be set, that you come over to the court, and then the magistrate will be the one doing the intermediary. And you tell your story and he tells his story, and then he decides on what's the way forward from there.
So he, meaning the magistrate.
Yes, the magistrate
will decide the way forward from there. And I think it's important that everyone knows that, you know, you don't get a protection order. It's not a piece of paper that you then go and give to the perpetrator or the person. That protection order needs to be served to them, and it's not served by you yourself.
Yes. Thank you very much, Taryn. Once we return from the court with the protection order, we record the protection order down. We register the protection order. It has a protection order number. And a police officer will then go out with you to serve the protection order. You do not serve it yourself.
But do you have to go with?
It depends. If you were comfortable with going with, you know, sometimes, you know, there are places they cannot, it doesn't have an address and stuff like that. You need to go and show them where the place is. But if it's in around town and stuff like that, the street names and stuff, it's much easier. And remember, it can even be served to the perpetrator where they work.
Yeah.
It does not necessarily mean that when they are at home, that's when they can serve the protection order.
As long as it's served in person.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to note that, you know, if you're opening a protection order against somebody and you then don't feel safe continuing to live with that person or near that person, obviously then we can refer you to our shelter, which we've had a podcast about before. But when you go and serve that protection order, or even afterwards, people think that they're stuck and all their furniture is stuck and all their clothes are stuck. No, it's not, because the police will go with you to collect all of your belongings that you can then take with you and leave. So it's not to think that, oh my gosh, I'm going to open a protection order and then I'm going to lose everything I have. You're not going to lose everything you have, because the police will escort you there, serve the protection order, and give you an opportunity to gather all your belongings and take them with you.
And sometimes it's the other way around. The police will go with you and then let the person take his belongings and leave. It's not always a case of by where you have to live. Exactly. Sometimes it's, this is my comfort zone. And so I cannot leave.
Oh, this is my house.
Yes, the person must leave. Yeah. Yes.
And Farida, why are you so passionate about this in particular?
Ooh, I am so passionate about this because I myself was I am a survivor of domestic violence. I was married for 11 years and working at GRIP, funny part, and used to give advices and to survivors, you know, dealing with GBV. Meanwhile, I was also in the hot seat, you know, and I used to say that I'm staying because of the kids. I'm doing this because of the kids. But, you know, one day I realized that this is not serving purpose to my life or my kids' life. And I told my mother that I'm leaving, and she said, no, whatever you decide will support you. So I decided then in 2019 that, no, enough is enough, and I left my marriage. So don't stay and say it's for the sake of the kids, because the kids will one day lose you. You know, if a person can undress you and beat you up and you're running in the streets naked, what else can they do? What else are they capable of doing? So we need to be focused. Yes, we love our children. We want them to see, like, to grow up in families whereby there's a father and a mother. So, but also think about what they go through when you're screaming and crying in the house. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's why I am so passionate about this. And also to say that life hasn't been easy. It has been quite a roller coaster from a young age. You know, a lot of things happen in my life. And only now, only at a later stage, and I realized this was abuse. And yeah, the more I speak about it, the more I heal.
Helping is healing.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. So I always ask you guys, all the team members of GRIP, what is your motivation? What's your motivation to continue? Every day you deal with women who have been beaten up or children who have been raped. And what keeps you getting up in the morning and saying, I'm still going to do this?
You know, at times I look at this like it's a calling, you know. Mm. To help, you know, sometimes I'm one person that even if I don't have, but the next person must have something, you know. I feel like everyone deserves to be happy. Yeah. And I always say to people, you know what, when you go through something, share with someone, because you cannot deal with something alone. You know, so I always say that you're not alone. We are here for you. And remember, at GRIP, we have confidentiality policies, and it's not a policy. We abide, we live by it. We don't need to be constantly reminded of confidentiality and stuff. I can walk up to Taryn and pour my heart out, you know, going through some challenges and say, this is what it is. You know, sometimes you feel like, no, I'm not enough in this world and stuff like that. But she will pick me up, you know, lift me up, and we carry on from there. And I feel that each and every woman can have that sense of, you know, thinking to say that, I'm not alone. I know there's people who care, even if they are not family. Even if, you know, sometimes people in our communities, there's people that say that there's a saying, what will people say?
Yeah.
Ne? If I leave my marriage, what do people
say?
Yes, yeah. They will gossip judge. About me. They'll judge me, you know, discrimination and all that. So, yeah, I feel, Guti, when you are not alone, we are there.
No, in the moment, I always say the moment you tell your story, people will be like, wow, I'm not alone. And then that will automatically allow them to share their story.
Exactly.
And sooner than later, you'll be five people sharing
your story and seeing that you aren't alone, you have someone.
And also to add to that, you know, when I do my awarenesses, I first tell my story, because, you know, it is cool to hear it from someone who has been through it. And the more they see that, man, this person, she said she's HIV positive, but look at her, you know, really, is she? No. Is it true? You know, when you come out of that session, people will come to you and say, you know what? You made me brave to speak up about what I went through.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think that there are people who goes out there and share their stories of what has happened to them. So, yeah.
And if parents are listening today, or you are a young lady listening today, or whoever's listening today, if they take one thing, one piece of advice, what would you say should it be? If they just listen to one thing we say today, what would that be?
You are not alone.
Yes, there's always someone.
Yeah, there's always someone
here for you. Mm.
And I think it's something that we speak about at GRIP all the time. I don't know. People speak to us at GRIP and, you know, you even asked. And a lot of people ask us, like, why do you guys do what you do every day? It must be such a difficult job. And what keeps you passionate? But, like, GRIP is basically, I mean, not everybody has been through something, but majority of us have. Like, we're an army of survivors.
Yeah.
And we're part of what we've been through. We've made it. Mm. We still are all successful women and, you know, living our lives. Mm. And we're happy. We've found happiness.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, we go out there just trying to inspire other women to not be sad, to speak up and say that you've survived something horrific. You should be proud of yourself that you managed to get through it. And, Farida is someone that's really good at doing that in the community, standing up, telling her story and engaging with people and getting people to open up. And because of her awareness efforts, we've really managed to help a lot of people who've come to us then and been willing to say, God, it happened to you, it happened to me as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and also to say that the way that you interact with people, you know, sometimes you don't need to be the bigger person.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to a community, be in their shoes. You know, there's different communities in the outskirts there, where you see that these people, they don't have anything and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get there and start speaking English and stuff like that. No.
Mm-mm.
You get to their level, you know, and make them understand. That is what I always say to my team, that like they would say that, no, we can't do awareness raising at high schools and stuff like that. The kids, they'll laugh at us and say, no, when you get to a high school, be a high school child as well.
Exactly. Go down to their level.
Don't be an adult. Because if they look at you, they'll feel like you are scolding them. Oh, this person, you know.
Oh, this is a teacher.
Exactly. Mm. And you know, the funny part, when you start talking and you ask of rape and what is rape and stuff like that, they'll be like opening up. You know, teenagers with the sexual reproduction health thing, they love the talk. So it gets very, very, very good because they interact very well. So, yeah.
And what was your worst day at GRIP?
Ooh, my worst day at GRIP. Quite a few worst days.
Hard days.
Hard days, and you know, whereby you feel, when you get at home, you need to check on your kids and say, has anyone touched you and stuff like that. Yeah. It's one of those days. So, yeah, my hard day at GRIP was when three siblings came through and they didn't want to talk to anyone. I had to be their mother. I had to be their mother and gain their trust. They were sexually violated by their father, who was now trying to ship them away to Mozambique. Yeah, it was sad because they also had the same sexual transmitted infection. Oh, it was a sad day for me. You know, when I think of it, I see how cruel the world is.
Mm.
You know, seeing those kids being so vulnerable, the other one couldn't walk properly, the youngest one. So that was my worst day. You know, I had to think of my kids, you know, and looking at their age is the same age that I also went through hell and back, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, and to put things in perspective, I mean, I was there when we, you know, when we invited these three kids to the office. And also, I mean, it was very emotional for all of us. But, I mean, we offered them some Coke and some biscuits. I mean, these kids had never seen a Coke before.
Or biscuits.
They had never eaten a biscuit. They were, like, smelling it. Like, what is this? What is it that these people are feeding me, you know? They couldn't even speak. They couldn't speak properly. And I'm not speaking English. Like, I'm saying they couldn't even really speak properly. So they had no education. They'd literally been locked or, like, kept captive, kind of, inside of their home in the community.
They had to earn their food.
They had to earn their food. I mean, it's a nightmare to even think about. But I think in our awarenesses, we also need to, you know, encourage the community. If they see these things happening or they suspect that something's going on in another house, it doesn't necessarily need to even be someone that you know.
Just make an anonymous call. You don't have to get involved.
And yes, we'll go and do a sort of door-to-door campaign and see what's happening there. Because we've had a number of cases like this where we find kids that are locked up, that are being abused. And if we're not out there knocking door to door, doing door to door campaigning and that kind of thing, who's going to find these poor children and help them? That's what keeps us awake at night.
Mm.
But as always, I would like to end on a happier note.
On a positive note.
On a positive note. What was your best day, your best case, your biggest win at GRIP?
My biggest win is when... recently, actually, we had a baby that was abandoned at Nelspruit Police Station. And, yeah, being me, I jumped up. I was coming from night shift at Dorof Ferreira, but I jumped out of bed. Immediately, they said that there's a baby at the police station. And so grateful because on that week, we received formula and
nappies
and, yeah, some baby wipes. So I quickly went to the police station and, yeah, started feeding the baby. You can see that the child was hungry for days, you know. Mm-hmm. On one go, that bottle was empty. And, yeah, and we eventually managed to locate the parents of the child. So that was a good one because, you know, there are so many kids that get abandoned and you don't have a trace of where the child is from or who are
birth
the parents. There's no birth certificate, you know, there's nothing, literally nothing.
So actually we must just ask that if you do abandon your baby, please just leave the birth certificate.
And also please include the card, you know, the birth card.
So we at least can, they can at least register for an ID. It sounds harsh to say, please leave the birth certificate. But if you don't have a birth certificate, they're babies, they don't know who their parents are. They'll never be able to have a bank account.
But that's a terrible thing.
Account.
Never mind a bank account. They won't be able to get registered into a school.
No.
And, you know, we have a lot of cases, especially at the shelter where we deal with these cases, where we have kids that don't have birth certificates. I mean, they don't even know their own birthday.
No.
You know, their proper surname. And it's something that is really important. And that's also, we've had Temba on the show before.
Yes.
Where we've spoken about our human rights and advocacy program. And there we've been able to help a lot of people with getting the correct documentation. But it's not something that's easy to do.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, so it's important that that mothers get the documentation for their babies. But at least in that case, we had a really happy evening.
They were reunited, and you know, it was the quarrel between the mother and father. You're not taking care of the child. You keep the child, and this one is now saying, "No, my mother and my sister says the child is not mine." Yeah, it's one of those things.
And then who did the baby go to?
To the mother.
To the mother.
Yes, and we advised the mother to go and apply for maintenance at the court. The grant won't be easy because the mother is a foreign national.
Then it's difficult. Oh, I remember this story. Ladies, thank you for your hard work, Farida. I think you make such a big difference. Whenever I thank you guys for coming on the show, I always want to cry because I never imagine the world is already such a difficult place. And then just imagine if you weren't doing what you were doing, I think it would be so much worse, you know. So thank you on behalf of everyone who will use your services, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for what you do.
Farida, you're a mover and a shaker.
Yeah, and a big asset to group.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. And really, I'm passionate. You know, you wake me up at 12 o'clock, I jump.
Yeah.
Because I know how it feels. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
In ons volgende episode gesels ons met Nomshadu. Ons fokus op voorbehoedingsprogramme wat Grip bied.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you for your time, and I hope you have a wonderful day and a peaceful week.
Thank you for having us.
It's always a pleasure. Jou nommer 1 keuse in die Laanveld.